Hey gang, let me tell you about the Austin Music Foundation. The Austin Music Foundation is a nonprofit dedicated to strengthening and connecting the local music community with innovative programs that empower musicians, music industry professionals, and music businesses within Austin's creative economy. With expert panels, consultations, mentoring, and mixers, AMF's programs provide the necessary tools and opportunities to help the Austin music industry succeed. Find them at austinmusicfoundation.org. Go down there, check them out, get involved. Austin Music Foundation. Let's get down.
You may ask yourself, well, how did I get here?
It's time for How Did I Get Here? And now here is your host.
All right. Hello, I'm Johnny. I'm your host. Welcome to the show and happy 2018 to all of you listening. Thank you so much for listening to the show. I totally appreciate it. Man, I'm actually doing this on New Year's Eve. It's about, what time is it? It's about 7:30. I'm about to head out to my gig. I went and did sound check. I'm playing my New Year's gig with Skyrocket out at Ernie's on the lake. This is our third night in a row, my fourth night in a row. I played that Tom and Us show on Thursday at One to One Bar, which was a great show. I got to play guitar with a lot of people paying tribute to Tom Petty. I sang a Tom Petty song and got to sing on the finale, American Girl. Got to sing the first verse. That was exciting because I play that in Skyrocket. At every show, we play that song. Almost every single show we play American Girl, and I never get to sing it. And I got to sing it that night, me and Darren. Anyway, I got to play with a lot of great people, David Polkingham, Julia Milanta, Gabriel Rhodes, Matt Hubbard. I played guitar on his song and got to play guitar on Breakdown. It was very exciting, very fun, and very communal thing. And we were raising money for biointegrity.net, which is saving rainforest all over the world. And we ended up saving 4,000 acres that night. Huh? That's pretty exciting. Anyway, the next day, Friday, we went to Houston and played at Fitzgerald's with Skyrocket. Great show. Packed house, great crowd. We had a great show. Then Saturday night we played in Dripping Springs at Mercer Street. Great show. And tonight we're playing at Ernie's on Lake Travis. Going to be an exciting show. I have a great show for you guys today. First show of the year. The Wheelwrights are here. Their debut album, A Forest and Trees, is out now. I urge you to go to thewheelwrights.com and find them. We have a fantastic conversation about playing this rootsy sort of Americana based in like bluegrass and not necessarily country, but like folk kind of music. You get some John Denver vibes. There's a lot of harmonies, a lot of beauty coming out. Something to say in their music. Great stuff. Check out A Forest and Trees. And you can see them if you live in Austin on January 20th. They will be playing at the Lemon Lounge right here in Austin, Texas. Go to thewheelwrights.com. We have a great conversation. And their album is absolutely fantastic. Get it. All right. Enjoy my conversation with this fantastic band from right here in Austin, Texas, the Wheelwrights. And also, Happy New Year to you. Let's get down.
Your letters every day, just to keep the hint of us alive. But now the leaves are turning.
Living the dream.
Yeah, that's true. I'm wearing.
We make her wear that anytime we do anything band related.
What?
Wear the Living the Dream shirt.
I guess maybe it's my pride socks. Like this lady who is. So, like, our good friends have this nonprofit called Ruby's Rainbow, mm-hmm. and they hand out, they award scholarships to sort of, like, young adults with Down syndrome who want to go on to secondary, like, college programs.
Yeah.
And so I know the person who does these pride socks, we know through Ruby's Rainbow, which is, and her thing is the rainbow, too. But it's, like, but it's, you know, I guess what, like, her deal, it's, I'm not sure what the Pride Sox thing is.
The Pride Sox benefit something?
Yeah, it's she focuses a lot on like people with special needs or just people like, you know, just being different, being yourself. And
that's a good. Is there a place where they sell that? Because I got to do Christmas shopping. Because that's what, you know what I mean.
I think if you
feels good to go shop when you're doing.
I don't know if she sells. I think if she's local. Yeah. And I don't know that she has like a place where she has her stuff. But if you go to her website, I saw something. She was like, if you're local and it's Christmas, I'll deliver the socks to your house or whatever, t-shirts or whatever.
Do you guys all come from a folk thing? This ties into that because there's a lot. There's usually like a lot of there's a purpose to folk music,
right?
More than there is to like rockabilly. You know what I mean?
Sure.
There's a social purpose.
He and I don't. I don't come from folk. Yeah, we come from like kind of hardcore. Like,
yeah,
really.
Well, I listen. Yeah. Well, I remember when I was growing up. I mean, I loved Tool. You know? Yeah.
Yeah.
Tool and like At the Drive-In were like my favorite bands.
Yeah.
And so. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, we used to play in bands, separate bands, but played shows together a lot like 10, 12 years ago in Austin that were like, you know, basically like prog punk type rock stuff or whatever, yeah.
Well, maybe that's why you guys are so good and you slipped into it, because there is some great musicianship going on.
Well, thank you.
And even like when you just played the piano, you could tell it wasn't a...
Oh, she's a master piano player.
I'm a recovering classical pianist.
Yeah. Oh, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like I came to Austin... in the mid-90s to go to music school.
Okay.
So I've been here since 95, and I went to UT and have music degrees and stuff like that.
Wow.
I mean, he's got one, too, but...
That's true. Yeah, I majored in piano.
Yeah,
as
he has a degree in piano, too.
Where did you come from?
From Anna? Dallas.
From Dallas?
So I didn't go very far.
Okay.
She has a much bigger folk...
I do. I grew up in a pretty religious, not pretty, a very religious house. And so, like, all the, like, church music, that kind of stuff. And my dad's a big bluegrass and country fan. So I grew up listening to a lot of, like, old country and, like, also things like Carter Family and Bill Monroe and...
Gaither Brothers.
Yeah. Yeah. The
the Vocal Majority.
You had the Vocal Majority. But, you know.
my family was actually in the Vocal Majority. His family was
it. They're more, he's more serious about the, like, singing.
We can talk barbershop all day.
I know, you could. You could. Now, so I guess, like, and I like folk music a lot. And I, you know, listen to a lot of Bob Dylan and stuff like that. And, you know, that's like the thing that that's the gateway drug maybe into.
Yeah.
You know.
Did you go deeper and like start going back or like around? Like, I know there was a lot of guys around then, or like, are you like into Joan Baez?
Mm-hmm. Stuff? Yeah. Like? But yeah. I mean, I feel like a lot of the stuff that I grew up listening to and that type of music took a backseat when I had to go put all my concentration into playing piano and playing a lot of classical music. But I mean, I love playing that type of music too, but not in the same way. I don't know, it never was quite the right fit. So, like, as a job, I'm a piano teacher and I teach all of that kind of stuff, but I didn't really like write music or play stuff outside of classical music until like in my 30s. You know,
classical music was always like the scholastic side of music for me, and then there was like a spiritual side. It was like secular versus spiritual, and that's how I have to like separate instruments. Piano to me is like nothing but sort of scholastic, technical.
Mm-hmm.
That's just like I don't speak through it very well. I can kind of write on piano, but not really. So guitar is like where I like emote music, and piano is where I like study it.
For me, there's always been a divide, between the music that I listened to, that I would sing along with, or, you know, that type of music, and then what I was doing professionally, which was, you know, classical and accompanying stuff and giving like solo recitals and accompanying choirs and, you know, teaching, all that kind of stuff. There was like two different worlds, and the two didn't meet.
With all that education, is it hard to, when you go from like really like reading and learning and all that stuff? Because I don't come from that world. I come from more just like a writing thing and just pick shit up as you go.
That's
along.
How I am.
You know what I mean?
I never took any lessons or anything. I just pick up instruments and play them. Yeah.
Does it make it hard to write? Because I've worked with incredibly educated people, and some of them are like, oh, that won't work because of this. Right. And like they tell you something in theory and you're like, no, but it works. Check it out.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, right. I
just did it.
The rules start to override the right. Sort of letting it be what it is. I had to take a break for a while, actually, whenever I got out of school. I probably didn't write for a couple of years. And it was a separation from that sort of like hyper scholastic.
I feel like that too.
Hyper technical side of things like that I had to sort of. It's like the old adage of like you learn so that you can forget it later, you know? Mm-hmm. But it's just there as a foundation. So you have like principles of music that exist because of it. But when I was in the thick of it, it was very difficult for me to write things because I was so concentrated on like the right way.
Well, you know, it's hard. It's hard to let. I think.
Well, because what you
I think you have to let go of all the stuff that you learned. I mean, it's the same thing. You it's in there and it takes a while to like. I came out of music school with a lot of baggage around, I'm surprised, around like my own playing and whether I was, you know, creative enough or what, you know, just all that kind of stuff. And so I didn't play for a long time after. I mean, I was always like teaching and stuff like that, but I didn't play for a long time after music school.
I think where it helps us is that there's a language behind it. Like mm-hmm. whenever you learn the technical side of music, mm-hmm. you can sort of speak in, hey, it's in this key, or let's change the key and move it to this. Mm-hmm. And that sort of background education helps just make things a little bit more flexible, maybe, mm-hmm. or a little faster. Like the learning curve is a little shorter whenever we're trying to work with each other to do things.
It's actually helped me that you guys are so good because like I picked up the pedal steel and picking that up and just knowing, you know, how, where all the keys are and just learning that. It really helps.
Well, that's what, I mean, you guys are much more like instrumentalists than I am. You know, and so I think that's really cool. The way that you can pick up pedal steel is like a scary mystery to me. I don't know. There's a lot of strings, a lot of pedals. I only have like one pedal really that I really need to use.
Yeah. That's exactly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Like I'll just.
Where's
take
that one that does that? Okay. I got
this one. It's called
like
sustain.
The sus4 one.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
Just that noise. That's all I want to ever do. Mm. Got it. Yeah.
So how long? I mean, because that's a feat.
Pedal steel? Oh, I don't know. I know I've scratched only the little surface.
Well, he played dobro, right, first?
Lap steel. But same thing. Sorry, yeah. And I actually tuned it like a I guess it was a dobro. Tuned it in open G, because that's like kind of like a bluegrass tuning.
Right. So from a physical standpoint, like
it was kind of the same.
This motion, you know, of working a slide and working the fingers on the other side was there. Yeah, I already
had that. I had that for about a year or two. I did that, and then...
I'm still sad that you don't have that anymore.
Yeah, I know. And then...
Wait, can I say, is that like a sweatshirt for the Darren Aronofsky movie?
It is, yeah. Yeah, it is.
What a weird thing to have.
It is. I work for the Alamo Draft
House. His entire wardrobe is movie related.
It's like
movie
free movie
He gets free movie swag.
He never pays for anything.
Well, I got my Slater shirt.
Okay. It's freaky. I just watched it last night.
Yeah.
That's why I was like, why is he wearing that?
Yeah, it's pretty.
But we had a conversation about this the other day. We were picking up our kids from school, and you like walked up, and there was somebody else. I've never seen this movie.
Yeah, I got a weird religious conversation with
this
lady.
That was really kind of strange.
Picking up her kid from elementary school. I was like, note to self, don't wear the mother's sweatshirt anymore.
Are you guys a couple?
No. Neighbors.
Okay. Neighbors. Okay. Yeah. I thought you were picking up your kid, but you have kids.
And
you
I have kids. And they go to the same school
because you're neighbors.
And they live two doors away.
Okay. Yeah. Well, it makes it convenient for a band.
Practice is amazing.
Yeah, yeah. That's great.
Only walk two doors
I
down.
Don't leave. I'm just
sucks
like,
for Seth. He lives what in North Austin.
I live, I live like 51st area around like Mueller.
Do you have kids too?
Yep. Two kids.
How old are your kids? Do your kids like this music?
Yes.
Yeah. They do?
Uh-huh. My kids do. My son sings our songs all the time.
Me too.
Yeah. 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 My kids. So I have three kids. I have an 11-year-old and a, how old is she? 9? Almost 10? Like, I don't know. I've got three kids. I don't know what's going on.
Yeah.
I don't know. And I have a 7-year-old too. She's the youngest, so I forget about her. No. love you, Julia.
Classic
she
nerd child.
She doesn't listen to
no, the but they, but they all listen to it, especially like my son.
He's learning drums too.
Yeah, he's pretty decent. He's doing really good on the drums. But they will always hijack my Spotify and listen to, and I'll be like, "What is this? I don't know." And so finally, I told them to get their own Spotify. I told Daniel to set up a Spotify account for him so that he can listen to. So. he's one of our few followers on Spotify. is my son. Yeah.
When you're trying to build a fan base, just have it's a bunch really, of kids.
It's,
you know,
it's important to use them. I mean, it's a family. Well, I always say this about my piano studio, my piano teaching business. I always say that it's like the family business, because when, like this past weekend, I had my piano recital for all my students. So, you know, my kids have to help schlep all the stuff up to the church. And my son played drums with a bunch of folks.
Oh, that's really cool.
Yeah. And he and I actually played a piece together. Like,
nice.
He took a beat from a meter song that he's learning.
Oh.
And
that's pretty cool.
And I played a short Bach piece. And so we did a mashup with, like, Bach and the meters and played that.
It's classic combo.
That's super
like you
hit,
do.
Man.
It's been a
like
little overdone, Anna. Maybe.
No, one of the coolest. He learned. He really. I don't know. Okay, so this is not has nothing to do with our band, but I'm gonna talk about my son anyways.
Do it.
So a week before he was born, I saw James Brown at Stubbs.
Okay.
And I feel like James Brown is my son's spirit animal because, you know, Daniel really likes James
Mostly
because
he's an alcoholic womanizer, but.
Well, you know, whatever.
As soon as he starts driving, always check his glove for Mark.
Always. I'm out on
love. No, sorry, but go ahead.
No, he really likes James Brown, and he likes Stevie Wonder,
wow.
And like anything that's in that sort of, you know, funk soul.
Yeah,
stuff. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. So that's what he likes to learn on drums.
That's really cool, because a lot of times kids have very bad taste.
And at the beginning of this semester, one of my other piano students, who's about the same age as him, she came in, and I always ask my kids, I'm like, okay, you know, here's some technical stuff. And I'm like, okay, well, what are you listening to? What do you like? What music do you like? What are you listening to these days? And I had this one girl, and she was like, well, you know, I really like Stevie Wonder. And I was like,
well, that's pretty cool.
Really? What's your favorite song? What's a song that you like by him right now? She's like, well, you know, I really like Superstition.
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, hold on. So, because Daniel had been learning that.
Yeah.
And so in the recital this weekend, he played drums, and she played the bum, 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 bada, and I put the melody on top of it, and so we played that.
That's awesome.
Yeah,
that's cool.
It's funny.
That was kind of like the most fun thing ever.
I'm in this 7-person band, and there's currently, for the last 2 months, there've been 4 people learning Superstition,
nice.
And I play keyboards in this band. So anytime at soundcheck, if I get up to like go get some water or something, it's like you hear it. It's in this weird everyone's doing it trying to do it in time, but it's still in the slow mode.
So
how long have you guys been playing together?
I think it's been since 2014 or 2013.
Yeah, 3 years about.
John, can I ask you a favor? Can you close that window? Because I feel like they know when I'm doing this.
Yeah.
No, porque mira, está talking to people again. Let's go over there. Sorry. I'm Hispanic, so it's something. So cool. Whatever just happened right now, that seems super off color.
No.
Was totally. I'm just ragging my
your,
people.
Your house, man. We're, you know.
So how?
Your rules.
Hey, man. If you're racist in your house, that's cool, man. That's we're just cool, gonna man. Be on your show.
Your show. We're super white over here. We're just going to head back on the accents.
I've infiltrated the scene, but both of my parents were born in Cuba, but I look like I'm...
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, yeah. That's nice. How we do it.
Sneak in.
That's how we do it. No wall is going to keep us out.
No, absolutely.
All right, so go ahead.
About 3.5-4 years, I think, is what we've been playing together. We started out as a 5-piece, and so Seth had called me up one day and was like, hey, I've got kids, you've got kids. Neither of us have any time. Do you want to put a band together where the expectations fall within that sort of world?
Yeah.
And I was like, absolutely. So we started kind of writing together, you know, just a little bit. And then I think we had a drummer.
Yeah, we got a drummer. So, we did a couple practices with him.
And then
we were talking. We were like, we should get like a girl... Like to accent, you know, just to bring in that other
to have
like,
an accent, something nice.
Yeah,
to
well, no,
out.
To have that other like singing.
It would be great if she had red hair, because that's
we wanted to have, you know, like very like vocal heavy songs and stuff like that.
A lot of harmony and such.
Yeah,
so
that would complement it all very well. And then I think he was like, oh, well, I think my neighbor plays.
Well, my real story is like my wife and
I inserted myself into this band. So we were at my house, and your wife said to me, "Yeah, you know, I think John Michael's like starting some dad band. Yeah. Starting a dad band." And I was like, "Really?" She's like, "Yeah, something about Fleet Foxes." And
Whenever I texted him, I was like, "Dude, I kind of want to do something like Fleet Foxes."
And so I just like walked across the house because he was out in my room where you know all my instruments and piano and all that kind of stuff. And I walked in there and I was like, "Hey, do you need a keyboard player for your band?"
I was like, yeah, probably. Okay. So I like,
and I think you were like, "Can you sing harmony?" And I was like, "Yeah, I think so. Yeah."
So then she shows up to the first practice and we're all like, "Oh shit. This is like
you jaws know, on the
she's
floor.
She's got like she's ridiculous talent." So so she starts playing. We're like, "Yeah, we got this song." We had like three songs at the time.
Right.
So we like play it one time. She and then the second time she like plays it completely through with us without missing a beat or a note or anything.
Yeah.
And Seth and I the whole time are doing the like side eye to each other, like
giving each other the big eye,
Can we convince her to stay in our band is now the question, you know? And then we got a bass player, and that guy didn't work out. We got a different bass player, and he ended up moving along. Dude's name is Steve Durham. He's a super cool guy. And he, like, is a writer and does all kinds of stuff.
He's a really interesting
He's still a great friend of ours.
Yeah.
He just kind of, like, dropped out. He just didn't want to play anymore, right?
Yeah, he was just super busy with work, and it was, like, one of those things. Like we said, as a dad band, and the whole point was, like, we're going to fit this in when we can. None of us are out schlepping like every Tuesday playing. We just can't do it. We're all super busy.
Right.
But so when he stepped away, we were like, "Man, should we just like dial this back and do like a three piece?"
Well, and actually, so what would happen was, you know, like my original, whenever I brought this idea to him, it was like Fleet Foxes, sort of like this folky thing. And with like a little country sort of element to it. And I was wanting to get into the pedal steel. I was already playing lap steel. So I was like, "Okay, that's going to be in it." And then when we had the full band, the songs were like turning into rock songs. Like he would write a song and we'd play it and then we'd bring it to the band and it was like distortion.
Right,
and like,
right, right.
Yeah, it was like a rock song. Which sounded fun. I mean, it was
like, it was like this. Yeah, it was like a race
take it to the next level.
Right, right.
And then so once Steve left, it was like, "Man, maybe we should drop the drummer and just be like, get back to what the original idea was, which was something more folky."
Well, and I think all the songwriting And
it was us three anyway. It was
the
like
three of us just, you know, we're co-writing just about everything
together, and it just worked better to not have to deal with other people.
And that being said, we kind of had to rewrite our songs whenever we like went away from the full band because we were like, "Okay, well, we had always been allowing other elements to play." You know, when piano is playing with a bass guitar, you stay off the low end of the keys, right? Because that's like the bass's range. And so she started reincorporating her left hand more as like a bass element instead of just...
I realized I need to practice my left hand a lot more.
Yeah, so we really ended up kind of like going back through the songs that we had written and we shaved a few out and we're just like, these don't work
anymore. Yeah,
because
there were some that didn't work. There were some that, you know, were really cool. And we rewrote some. Work.
Are you hip to the helping still? Mm-mm. Piano?
No.
There's this cat name Charlie Helpinstill that goes under the name professionally Ezra Charles, who's from Houston. Turns out we're old friends, but I found out he's a lot older than me, but he invented this piano pickup that gives you a lower end for piano players that don't use bass, and it's a pretty famous piano. Something I know quite a few people that have them here in town.
Oh cool.
But it's called Helpinstill. Yeah,
all right, I'm going to check that out.
He also has ones that are almost like travel size, because I know with electronic pianos you can do it and stuff, but that's one that you like actually plug in the the pickup thing and it picks up the bass that. Yeah.
That's cool.
Yeah.
It's pretty sweet.
Anyway, so you guys, there is a total, like the opening song has the most Fleet Foxes vibe to it to me.
That was done in the blink of an eye. I mean, those guys,
I had a week of vacation from work and was over at Anna's a lot.
Yeah, we just recorded that at my house.
School and everybody's gone.
Well, I had sent you the song that's after that song because I had kind of wrote that song out. That's how we would write our songs because we get practice all the time. So, like, I'll write a guitar line and kind of piece it together on like GarageBand and then just send her that, and then she'll put her parts down. And he lives right down the street, so then he'll come over and they'll work on it. Yeah. And so I wrote this one song, send it to them. And I was like, here's the chords, here's everything, here's the lyrics. Because I had written the lyrics for it, and then I was like, but you should sing it. And then I was like, you guys have fun. It was a week off. And then they send me that back, and he's like, here, check out what we did.
And
then
they're like,
we did this too. Oh, we did this. And so like in like one day, they did like three songs. Because you did Baltimore, that Anti-Meridium, and the Ashes song
yep.
in that day.
And recorded it in what GarageBand?
Yeah.
Like what's on the record?
Yeah.
Was like
what's on the record? Because really? Like yeah. like now like one little just mic. that first song. Yeah. We I mean, I think because now
is there like a Fleet Foxes reverb setting on there?
I don't know. I don't know. And I don't even know what kind of microphone because like now
it wasn't a good one.
From when we recorded that to like what I have at the house now, there's been like a big
studio upgrade.
There's been it's way better stuff. But yeah. when we recorded that, it was like. Laptop.
I had this thing called iJam that you can like just plug into like a USB.
I don't even know. I had like an old.
Well, yeah. Anyone that's listening to this, it's a musician that you know. Mm-hmm. You know those musicians that are like, oh, you should do this, and they're like, I can't because. Well, yeah, you can. No, just get an iJam, stick it in your laptop, and yep. make it.
I use my iJam with my iPhone. All the time.
And we tried to actually redo that song. Remember how we were going to try to re-record it? And
couldn't
we just couldn't get it.
Yeah.
It just was
the thing that just came out was the right thing.
It's awesome.
And we recorded the guitar line is something that I had had forever. Yeah. It was like one of those, you know, everybody has their little like noodle things that they've just been messing around with and never turned into a song forever. So mm-hmm. I was like, well, I had this thing, you know, it's like, it doesn't go anywhere. It just repeats over and over again. Mm-hmm. And so I laid down, you know, a few bars of that. And then she laid piano on top of it. And then we just took turns back and forth.
Like he would sing. The vocals are completely improvised. Like it was like on the spot, just did them. You would sing a line and then I would come and sing it. And then you would do another one. And then I would do another one. And then we just, you know.
Pieced it all together. Yeah, it was great.
It was pretty cool.
It was cool.
How did you guys end up getting into working with the artists? So did that come later after you wrote the songs?
That was just like we were trying to come up with an idea for the release of the album, and we know that you gotta, you know,
do something.
Yeah, do something. And I don't know. We were just talking about it.
And I think so. Like
ideas building.
You know, whenever you guys have an idea, I'm the kind of person where I'm like, you have an idea? Yeah, we're gonna do that. Like, because you know, it's easy to have an idea and let it just be an idea.
Of course.
But I'm the kind of person, I'm like, okay, well, this is what we're going to do, and we're going to do this.
She's definitely the mom of the band. I mean, it's like,
we're making
it's great. Yeah, she really does. She's like,
well, I think we were talking about it, and we were having this whole conversation about how, like, how do you release an album that, like, no one, you know, it's just, there's so much noise in the market, and just to try to get your music out, especially in Austin, where there's just so much music. And we're like, how do we, you know, if you release an album, it's like you have something to talk about on social media for a month and a half if you milk it. Yeah. And then it's like everyone forgets. And so I think the original idea started with, well, what if we release an album like one song at a time?
Once a month.
And that would give us a full year to talk about it.
That's where it started. And then, Seth is a really great visual artist, too. And so I think that there's like an interest in... like visual art anyways, like, you know, and that sort of made sense to, and just the fact that when we recorded three songs with Chris James.
Yeah. The first chunk of the recording was three songs.
We just, you know, we went and did those songs and then we said, what if we're trying to decide, you know, when we were going to record more songs and who we were going to do that with. And we thought, well, you know, wouldn't it be cool if we just used different people for recording that we're friends with. So in that way of like...
More collaboration.
Collaborating with different people, not having to record all the songs with one. Just, you know, how would that...
Sure.
What would that do for the songs? And then just sort of expanding on that idea of collaboration. Like,
also, almost all the songs... I think every song on that record, except for the first one, the bulk of all the instrument was all done live.
Mm-hmm.
We tracked like all our parts live together.
That's good. You should, because it's kind of music you play.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I don't think, like, I mean, the only thing that would add, I mean, because I don't really think there's anything that we didn't do
just
separate, just vocals, I think. Yeah. Or maybe like some tambourine or something, you know, stuff like that.
But like the bass of the feel of the
like
song
all of our
is
instruments,
the three of you guys playing together and communicating while you're doing that.
Yeah.
That's an important part of the kind of music that you make. Like if you're making... Yeah. You know, some kind of pop music that doesn't rely on that kind of thing.
Yeah.
But I feel like that's one of the things that, like, in the mainstream kind of music is getting lost.
Right.
I do too.
You know,
I think
the actual magic that people make together.
And it's because of how much technology has infiltrated the process. You know, I mean, there's so much opportunity to just make everything perfect.
Right. But it's so cool that you guys have a finite amount of time that you can actually work on stuff, but technology works on your side because you can pass around a song through technology.
So it's a great thing.
It is a great thing on some level.
But know when to.
Don't abuse it.
Yeah. And know when to let go of it and, like, have the ability, like, we can still get in a room and play music together.
Right.
You know what
I mean? Right.
So we use the technology stuff in the way that's like.
But then we had Wait, sorry, I kind of got off there. But we. No, but we had
art. Let's talk.
Yeah. So yeah, we did the three. Art. We basically broke up the album into three different sort of recording sessions.
Right.
So that started with three different studios.
Mm-hmm. And the first one was this guy, Chris.
Chris James. Okay. He's a longtime friend of mine. He's more of like a sound engineer. Music engineer, sound engineer, designer. He does music for like commercials and sound engineering for ads and stuff like that.
But those guys know how to make stuff sound good.
Oh yeah, he's great, and he has his own little studio on East Cesar Chavez, and then it's called Pool Party Studios, and then we did Estuary, which is off of Airport,
North Hyde Park.
Yeah, North Hyde Park area, and then we did Ramble Creek
with Britton.
Britton. And then, but how do we get to the artist? I don't even really remember.
I think I said something about it maybe of just like, what if we did a, since we're releasing it. Since we're releasing it once a month, we've got time to kind of think ahead. And I was like, so what if we reached out to different artists and did a different, a different artist did a song or did a piece just for the song? What if we did a collaboration where someone created visual art for the song, but we give them the song first since we have the recordings?
Yeah.
Right.
And, we recorded three songs. Well, the third one we didn't have to release for another 3 months, or really at all until we started the process.
Right.
And that's kind of how we did it, is we just kept up with, we would record early enough to where we could send the songs out to these artists and be like, hey, put it on headphones. If you hate it, obviously, send it back and we'll find someone else or whatever. But if it speaks to you in any way, do what you do. And I think that idea sort of spun out. We got into a conversation once I kind of proffered that first idea of all the benefits that had to it and all the kind of like how cool it would make the full layout once everything was done.
Like what were the possibilities? Like it opened up a bunch of different possibilities.
Because most record art is, it's one vision. It's like somebody's got an artist and they do one thing, and we were like, what if we had 12 different
That's awesome.
Styles in there. I mean, it's people who do mural work, and people who do digital painting, woodwork. I mean, all kinds of crazy stuff.
You're immediately creating a small community that can branch out into a thing.
We were like, now we can say, and then the unintended benefit is that you've got a marketing team, right? Because instead of it just being you that's trying to put your music
out,
you've got artists who have their own communities who have also done, are now a part of this project that are going to promote it and talk about it.
Yeah.
And when you have, at the end of the day, it was like 16 different people or 17 different people or something that associated all had hands in the process of creating this thing.
Yeah.
Who all spoke about it because it was a different idea and it was something that wasn't really,
And I thought it was cool when we would sort of brainstorm about, well, who are some folks that we can, tap to do art. It was cool to just hear all the, I think you guys have more friends that are visual artists, but it was cool to just hear how those people were connected. Like one of the guys is like your childhood friend, right?
Yeah. He did My Mama's Ring.
My cousin did one.
Yeah, your cousin. And it was just cool to see who all are already in our lives that also have these amazing talents.
Yeah.
And I don't know. I felt a lot of gratitude for all the people that...
For sure.
Yeah.
And you're shining light on them, too. Sometimes these people, my buddy Chris, who did the...
Everybody we know My Mama's Ring.
Yeah, I know.
Every single person.
This other guy named Chris.
This other guy named
very
Chris.
Popular name in the 80s. But he does like corporate work. I think he's like a digital graphics artist I know he worked for a company that was, at one point he was doing stuff for NASA. And I mean, just sort of like inside the company type things. You know, like he would set up video presentations for them, and he'd set up just general art and layout and stuff for sort of like corporations. And so in order to get him, to get him to do a piece of art that he doesn't really ever get to showcase his art is pretty cool because he's a great artist. So, it's cool. And I'm sure there's other people that are like that too, that were part of this, like, Selena did the picture.
With the cool. photography.
It's,
that,
I don't know.
That
it was
did.
Just cool.
It's awesome. It also lends itself to like, when you guys released the full length album, did you do a art show?
We wanted to. That was the plan, yeah.
The problem is that these artists live, I mean, my cousin lives in New York, or lived in New York at the time.
My friend Chris is in Cleveland.
I mean, so this wasn't some of the folks,
oh, like, well, to have the actual original.
Yeah, like you could have done it like in an actual studio, you know what I mean?
Because that was our idea, too.
Just like to do something really, that's the hardest thing to do right now.
The ones we got in, we displayed at the show, at the album release show, but we just didn't get as many as we wanted to.
We had like the canvases of the, because Nikki Davis, who did the album, the front and back, because they're two different, like the front and back album, they're two different canvases.
Yeah.
And then you also have the canvas also for the
song he did.
The song he did with this, it's like super bright woodland creatures. Like, I don't know.
He's a muralist in Houston. It should be checked out. His name's Nikki Davis. He's awesome.
Yeah. I mean, it's fantastic. Really
Nikki Davis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. He does stuff like whole city blocks. It's awesome.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
He's huge stuff.
Does some big format stuff.
You're friends with him?
Uh-huh.
Will you hook me up? I play in Houston all the time. I'm always looking for cool, weird people to have on the show.
Absolutely, man.
Yeah, and
he's,
I love the art scene in
Houston.
Very dialed
into
really
that
good.
Scene down there. Like, very, very involved with all of it.
Yeah. Cool.
I think, too, one of the things that was interesting about the project is that when I started kind of realizing that, you know, this was, I think, a good idea, or that, you know, we were onto something, is when people started approaching us. Like, I started having people be like, hey, man, because I would talk about it, obviously, what we were doing. But I'd have people come out of the woodworks and just be like, hey, can I do a song? You know, and hey, can I do this and can I do that? I mean, there was three or four people that actually asked us if they could be involved in the project, as opposed to us going out and soliciting all of it.
That's
when I started feeling like, okay, this is like starting to have some legs.
It's cool.
To it, you know? It's like not just us like pushing through an idea that may or may not be
good,
you know. But other people started sort of giving validity to the concept by wanting to be involved.
Yeah, man.
And it gives like an album. You know, like, you don't look at album art. I feel like album art's not, you know, like, it's an afterthought now. And so, and the whole point of this, and this music, in my mind, is to sit and actually listen to it and to flip through and to, like, you know, block out the outside world and actually listen to the
record. And to have something. I mean, that's how I feel about the music, too. And I think about, like, music in general. Like, it's, for me, it's something that you make with your own two hands.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Like when you're playing an instrument, or my experience, I mean, there's lots of different, you know, like we were talking about electronic music and all that kind of stuff. And that's, which is completely valid.
Sure.
Music.
There's nothing wrong with that.
Right. There's nothing wrong with that. It's okay. If my son grows up to be, no.
If my son grows up to listen to EDM, that's okay.
It's okay. I'll still
love
him.
Still accept him.
I'll still love him. But like for me, and I think for all of us, making music is like, it's a thing. It's a tangible. You know, you have your instrument, and there's the feeling.
Yeah.
For me, like the feeling of the keys of the piano, or the feeling of the keys of it. And so then to take that and have this book with these pieces of art that you can like turn the pages of the book that comes with the record and look at that, and even just like to have the record. That's why we like made, you know, some vinyl with this too, and having
did you guys
like
bring me vinyl.
Oh my God! I didn't bring the vinyl with me.
They're terrible.
I know.
Jeez, seriously.
We're a terrible person.
Totally. I'm never going to release this podcast.
Oh.
No.
We can bring you one.
I'm just joking.
I'll make sure you get one.
So thanks for your time.
I will get it to you.
That's have your address.
I was trying to think about what it would be like, you know, I only really like read about it, but I listened to the album, and the album's fantastic.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, man.
There's another influence in there in the verse of one of the songs, and I can't remember the song. I should have written it down.
See, you didn't write down, I didn't bring you a record even, right? No.
Well, I listened while I was running, so I couldn't write down.
Oh, dang.
But
still not even.
There is a John Denver vibe in this one song in the melody. Uh-huh. And I was wow, that is like a, that's like a straight up, like, if like a musicologist listened to this, they'd be like, wow, these guys listen, they've thrown down with some Denver.
That doesn't surprise me.
Which isn't bad. I mean, that guy was always kind of underrated because of his weird accent.
Yeah. My parents told me if I had been a boy, I would have been named after a John Denver song.
So you'd be
Matthew.
Yeah.
There's a John Denver song named Matthew.
Yeah, weird. That's a really vague reference. Nobody would have
Yeah, I
don't
even
one.
Know. I mean, I'm not like the biggest John Denver guy.
Well, I mean, evidently, as you know, it was in my house.
But so. I'm 49, so like when I was a kid, like he had like TV specials and stuff.
Oh yeah,
you know.
I can remember him being
Denver's
on a Muppet
one of those
show
that's
that.
Like he's who I always go to whenever I'm feeling unoriginal in writing. I'm like, man, that guy wrote 100 million songs off like four chords and they all kick ass, so you can't.
John Denver?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you can't act like CG
so I'm not
and
too
D
off
aren't
base
enough,
saying
you know
that.
I mean?
Right.
Oh, not at all.
They are enough.
No, not at all. And I think what what we go for. And, you know, Seth and I think we, this is one of the conversations we had on our very first practice ever, you know, it was just the two of us in a little room. We're like, we come from backgrounds where like allegory and it's like you want the lyrics to be as vague as humanly possible. Right. So it's just like, you know, no one could ever get what I'm, where I'm coming from. Yeah. Yeah. And we were like, dude, what if we wrote some shit that people actually understood what we were talking about? You know, like what is
like really obvious
write
what we're
an
saying.
Actual hook.
Yeah. And know? So, but that's, we were like, you know, we want to focus on melody and we want to focus on some sort of message. I mean, it's not, you know, maybe not saving the world or anything, but it's like we wanted it to be something that was like accessible, you know?
Yeah.
Because that's this kind of music. And it's not saying, you know, you can't be
deep,
you know, or you can't like have beauty with the way that you write words, or you can't sort of like be a lyricist and be a writer in the process, but to be like purposefully vague for the sake of those things is like going too far. It becomes obtuse to a certain degree, you know.
Yep.
Do so, people still do that? Because that was a thing in the 90s.
It was a huge thing in the
90s.
You're
never gonna know what I'm saying.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, how do you like you know, Ted Gardner, who's was Tool's manager, was my manager for a while. He's an interesting guy. I never met those guys.
Yeah.
But I heard a lot of stories about him.
I was a huge,
huge Tool fan.
Huge Tool fan as well.
Yeah. I mean,
he's one that stood the test of time for me personally. Like, I can still listen to Tool and just be like,
"Oh yeah, I listened to the albums not too long ago again, just to do it." I was like, "Oh yes."
But on the flip side, like Radiohead, and like
I don't care for Radiohead.
I loved Radiohead. I still like Radiohead a lot. I don't listen to them like I used to, but sometimes I'll get back into those albums, and you know. I was so into it in the early 2000s, and I was just like, oh, man, you know, this is genius.
But were you guys, like, did you go as far as, like, Dream Theater or anything?
I never really got it. I liked Yes.
Like, I like Yes.
Yeah.
Early Yes, not, like, 80s Yes, but, you know, The Fragile and Close to the Edge.
I'm with you, but I see that. I mean, I
but
think
you know,
it's cool.
those
I can
two
appreciate
albums,
the musicianship.
The first two albums, I mean, if you listen, I mean, that's the thing. You listen to Yes, The Fragile, and then you listen to, like, Delouse and the Comatorium by Mars Volta, and they're just literally ripping them off. I mean, you listen to that, and I'm like, oh, God, Yes did this 30 or 40 years ago.
Yeah.
You know?
You're not even like a Wakeman fan? You don't think guys should be wearing capes?
Come on.
Celebrating their own heroes?
Well, you know what? If you want to wear a cape, that's your
go
thing.
Go for it.
Yeah.
But
cool
so, you know, I got into to Yes, and, you know, obviously, like Led Zeppelin and all that stuff, but I don't know.
I just think there's a time and place for things, and that time and place made a lot of sense when it happened because it hadn't happened yet, you know? But once it happens, it's like everything else. Like, one band does it really well, and then it creates a market, and so then studios get like, okay, cool, there's a market here, and then a bunch of other bands come out that sort of are copies of a copy of a copy, and eventually it gets watered down to the point where it becomes clear. It's like Eddie Vedder's voice. I always use this as an example.
Yeah, me too.
I loved his voice,
too.
You know?
Yeah.
But then, like, by the time you get to the Scott Stapp,
you
ruined Eddie Vedder for me almost.
Sure,
you know, at that
totally.
Point. And so, but there's a time and place for Eddie Vedder, but it just kind of, you don't need to go back to that because if you do, then it's just
you don't need to stay there.
I don't know if you've ever listened to the 653 shows that I've put out, but that is one that's on probably a good fraction, a visible fraction of I can't tell how good he is because he ruined everything.
Right.
I actually thought some of Eddie Vedder.
I loved his
Into the Wild soundtrack that he did for that movie. I thought that was great songwriting.
Yeah, that was a great movie too.
Yeah,
was it? Didn't he do that with like Nusrat Fateh Ali Khan or something?
Maybe.
I thought he did it all himself, but I don't know.
There was something that he did. No, he did something. Maybe he did something. But I do.
The Into the Wild soundtrack.
That was like his first solo thing.
It was like all solo. Yeah. He played everything on the whole album. Yeah. He played all the instruments.
And you're like, I think Sean Penn's like super cool. So if he likes him and gets him to, you know.
Yeah.
Well, and I saw Eddie Vedder at Bass Concert Hall like 5 or 6 years ago, maybe, or whenever he was on that tour where he was just doing like a lot of ukulele and stuff.
Yeah.
And which I mean, it was amazing. Like,
I'm sure you played some of those Into the Wild songs.
Yeah.
I have a really good friend.
It was really good.
I bought my aunt, like my aunt was like, oh, I heard this thing on NPR of Eddie Vedder and his ukulele album. So I was like, oh, I'll get her that for Christmas a couple years ago whenever it came out. And I told my friend, he was like, have you heard it? And I'm like, no, but I can imagine what it sounds like. And he grabbed my ukulele and he goes, made of concrete. It was really awesome.
That's
great. He did play Evenflow or something. That's kind of weird. You know? Like, probably shouldn't have done that. But there were also a bunch of assholes in the crowd, like shouting out for like, You're just like, oh, why are you here?
Don't be that guy.
Don't do that.
Hey, I just listened to an interview with Little Steven. The guitar guy. He plays with Bruce Springsteen.
Okay.
And he was saying that he went to the Springsteen on Broadway thing, and they have a person that comes out before the show says, hey, you cannot yell out Born to Run.
Don't shout.
This is a show that he's doing.
He's not taking requests.
Do not yell shit out.
Yeah.
Wow.
We know how you guys are.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
Because he's got the enforcer.
We know what his fan base is looking for.
Yeah.
This isn't it.
In the program, that guy is like, he's listed as.
If that's why you came, leave now.
Yeah.
It's not happening.
So what's next? Like, you guys did this pretty massive thing, and it was a very unique thing. Is that something?
And then we
like,
felt exhausted after all the Herculean. I know. Then we had to go take a nap for like a month or so.
Well, did you guys see this this Lady Gaga documentary? I know this is
no,
way
I haven't watched it yet.
It's on Netflix, right?
Yeah. No. But there's this thing where she's like, man, I've worn like a meat dress. I've worn like a metal dress. You know what I'm doing? That's gonna be totally like.
Yeah.
Nothing I've ever done. I'm going to wear a jeans and black t-shirt for this trip. That's my new style. But it's funny because like you either go totally basic or you keep on trying to like next time you do like, you know, 12 videos for a record.
Right.
Yeah.
Like that,
which no, we won't go that far. That's not going to be next.
No. Next will, I mean, we already have. Well, I mean, we just were writing.
A couple videos.
Yeah,
we do. That's all like self-produced.
So
stuff.
When she I
did the I've, desert, you did the
I've,
desert.
Yeah, I've done all like also the videos that are floating around there. The one with the desert. Summer before last, my family and I we went on a road trip to Montana and back, and so we were driving out through Utah, you know, and all like and for that song "Bro Shoe," which is about the artist Everett Ruiz. I just like all the stuff in that video is like me with my phone while the car is driving down the house, you know, that kind of stuff. But like the other videos that I've made, I go to the public domain project where you can go online. There's this website called Pond5. I don't know who they are, but there's a huge repository of public domain like video clips. And I think they have sound clips and stuff like that. And so I'll just go. I've done it a couple times, so I think I've like reached my. You know.
I've hit the end of the
but I've put together music videos like that, just taking and little bits of things and editing them and putting it all together. And
well, that's you know I love that. I love that you guys are resourceful and things don't stop you. From
I had never
doing things. You just use the technology. Yeah. Like you got
never,
that phone. Might as well put it to work.
Yeah,
right?
I'd never made a video before. And I kind of discovered. I was like, oh, this is kind of fun. Right. I actually really like.
It is fun, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't pretend to say like I know a lot about.
Did you
video
just
editing.
Like to, you do put. The, you put iMovie. The footage in iMovie and you put it's super easy just like GarageBand
you know?
Yep.
Yeah. I think just the freedom like, of this band is that we
just do what we want,
you know, if someone wanted to, you know, give us some great record contract and make us famous, I mean we probably wouldn't turn it down, but
I would definitely not turn it down.
Anna's in.
I'm all kind of like
nah, I don't know, man, I'm tired,
but the freedom of this band is that
I don't have a fallback job. I don't have anything. This is it.
I've told them a million times like what I want the most out of the band, I get every Tuesday at her house, which is getting together with them and playing music because like,
and saying, what do we want
to
do?
Getting to just play music together and you know, those magic moments that no one will ever hear, or, you know, the first time that you write a song and the harmonies come together the right way. And it just sounds really cool. And it's like just for the three of you.
Yeah.
Like that's literally my motivation for doing it. And with that comes the freedom of saying no to shows we don't want to play.
Right.
To saying we don't have to do this, we don't have to do that. And because there's not some end goal that drives all of our actions.
The end goal is to make music that we're proud of.
Make good music if we can, you know? And so like that's kind of what this next album is about. And that's what the last one was about too. We didn't start writing those songs with this like idea of how this record was going to turn out, you know? I mean, the music came first and then through conversation and hanging out and drinking beers and that's where all these ideas came from, and it came together. And I think that's what the next album will probably be as well. Right now, we're just focused on music. Like, we just want the music to be really good, you know?
We've got like 7 songs already.
Yeah, and we have a bass player who also is a cellist. And so,
He was on the record. He was on the record. Except for that first track, but he was on.
And so, like, working with him, I think, has planted the idea of, like, oh, well, you know.
Oh, yeah. We are going to do. That's right. We are going to. The next record we'll have. Would be heavily based in strings.
Yeah.
So.
But
so we'll never be able to play it live.
Right. Yeah.
That's the fun of writing
records. We're essentially going to write a record that we can
We're going
never
with
play
the
live.
Beatles sort of method where it's like, that, we're
that
just
would, that would
be a studio
your,
band.
Your dream anyway.
That's my dream.
How,
yeah.
So just
how much
make millions
do
off
do you guys
records.
Play live? Like you're doing this show on January 20th at Lemon Lounge. Mm-hmm. I like that place.
Yeah. I like that place too.
We actually made a decision maybe a year ago to sort of transition most of our show playing to house concerts.
To try to do as many house concerts. Yeah. So we have a few house concerts lined up already for the next year, a couple, like in the springtime and stuff like that. But I think that we try to play a show
every 6 weeks.
Every 6 weeks, four to six weeks, and have it be someplace that is someplace that we want. It's someplace that we're excited about. And because if you're excited about the place that you're going to play, it's easy to go to your friends and everybody you know and be like, hey, this is going to be a lot of fun. You know, please come.
That's why we like the Cactus Cafe a lot.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And we just like the sound of the room, the style of the place.
That's a perfect room for you guys.
Yeah, we played there several times.
That's where our CD release was. Yeah. The album release show was there.
Yeah.
We played Collide, though, as well, and that was fun because we got to, like, DJ.
I heard yesterday that they are closing.
Yeah. No, really?
Yeah. Collide. Oh, have you ever been over to, it's on East 7th, that way? Collide.
No, I've heard this. I've heard people
talk about
it. It
was actually pretty cool. I just don't think it was marketed the right way.
Was it like an art space?
It was multi, like they had food and art and music. And
they're trying to do too many
Sultan
things.
Oh, I know Adam.
Yeah. He told me about that place.
Yeah, it's a cool place. And now it's evidently.
But we got to like DJ for like an hour before we played. So we like brought all of our records up there. I played like Black Star and I brought a bunch of weird stuff.
Jeff Buckley and...
I brought
Songs Failure. In the Key of Life.
Yes, speaking you did. Of Stevie Wonder. Yeah.
Michael Jackson.
Thank
you. Because there's no party.
I brought an Oingo Boingo 7-inch that I have that's pretty excellent.
What song is it?
Oingo Boingo. It's Girls, Pretty Girls. Is that what it's called?
I don't know.
I love the pretty girls. They make me feel so good. and then the other side is like this weird B-side that I don't even know. I don't even remember what it's called. But it's just, you know, I love Danny Elfman. So like...
Me too.
I had to like throw a little bit on there just to kind of make everybody...
I love
like,
Danny Elfman and I love Oingo Boingo.
Me too, man.
Like I like... some people don't.
I think they're great. And I can hear all of like...
What comes later. Like, all and it's in there. And, like, you absolutely can.
Did you guys ever see that weird movie he made?
Uh-uh. Which one? Wait, maybe?
It was like a weird movie that he made like in the 80s. But it was like when he was still in Oingo Boingo. This is before he was who he was. I think he's... I can't remember if he made it. It's terrible, but the music is really good.
Really cool.
Yeah.
I'm going to check it out for sure.
I know he's in it.
Nice.
I think he's in it.
John Michael's like super movie guy.
Are you?
Yeah.
Both of y'all, obviously. I can't... Yeah. Y'all can quote movies all... I can't do it.
I haven't seen the new Star Wars, but you saw it?
I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, you haven't?
I just had a baby. Well, I didn't. My wife did. But yeah.
Like soon.
Like 2 weeks.
Oh, wow. Congratulations.
Thank you very much. So, yeah, I didn't feel like telling the wife, like, good luck with the baby. I'm going to go
catch
a film. Yeah, I'm going to go
check out Star Wars.
But I also like to wait on Star Wars.
But when the last one came out, didn't you, like, see it?
Oh, you got a little sneak. But that's when you were before you got a new job.
Yeah.
He gets the super.
I went by myself, like, in the after. One day I was just like, I'm not waiting for my cousins.
I'm going.
And I went. Yeah.
Well, I was the GM at Slaughter Lane, Alamo Draft House. And so when Disney sends the movie out, they allow one projectionist and one theater manager to pre-screen it before it releases.
Okay.
See. And so I got to like watch it like
God, I bet that's
by myself like 2 days before it
I
came
bet
out.
That like whenever they're like, hey, we're gonna need someone to like people are like
usually
you know
I was
a
like
jerk.
Yeah, usually I was like really, you know, benevolent with those things, like handing them out to the staff and on that one I was like, Rank, I'm taking that.
yeah.
I'm all your bosses. I'm doing
exactly.
This one.
I'm doing it.
You know, man, I lived in Houston in the late 80s and early 90s and I had this band with this friend of mine that I went to high school with in Miami.
What was it called?
It was called, the band that we had was called Panjandrum.
Mm-hmm.
And my friend, his name's Richard Weiss, he designs all of your Alamo Draft Houses. He's the architect.
Yeah.
He was the guitar player in our band, but he was great friends with Tim and Carrie then.
Yeah.
And so like my knowledge of them is like when we were all like 18 and 90s. It's just kind of cool, like memories of them.
Yeah.
You know?
Talking about a small world.
Yeah. Really.
I mean, geez.
The nicest. They were always very cool.
Yeah.
He was still always super cool. Yeah. Richard's super cool.
Very down to earth, very easy to talk to.
We actually had a band here for a while called Mr. Rocket Baby that broke up in like the mid 90s or whatever. And we just did a reunion a couple years ago.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's cool.
Anyway. That's pretty fun.
That's weird that you know Richard. That's
I've known Richard since we were in high school in Miami Beach, senior high school.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's really cool.
Yeah. Small world. Crazy, right?
Small city.
Everybody knows everybody.
It is a small city.
But that's why I like Austin. I mean, that's why, I don't know. That's just the good thing about life anyways, is like, you know, meeting.
It's, I think it's actually it's a good thing about the, getting older. I
yeah,
think
maybe that's
just
it.
Being
maybe
around
that's
long
it.
Enough to where
yeah.
you finally meet everyone.
Yeah.
You know, it's that's I think that's it's true. A double-edged sword. I just went to this. There was a memorial for my friend George Reef, who passed mm-hmm. away, and like I'm 49, so now like you're at that age. There was a memorial the Sunday before for my friend Margaret. It was just kind of like this, mm-hmm. and it was weird because like Charlie Sexton was the band leader at the Sunday mm-hmm. before. I'm not laughing.
No,
I'm just laughing because we're at that age that like now when I talk to people, it's I sound like my grandma.
Yeah.
You know, well, you heard yeah. AJ Vallejo had a heart attack.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so it's like this weird thing, but like. Getting older and being a part of like this scene in this community, it the double-edged sword is we lost George, that was awful, but to see all the people that were all there and just kind of like yeah, the hallway and the backstage area mm-hmm. of just like love and
yeah.
you know immense talent and
yeah,
people
sure.
you've known, you've kind of watched their mm-hmm. faces start sagging. You
yeah.
look at them, you still see the young guy in
yeah.
there or the young lady
sure.
but yeah it was interesting but
yeah.
But I like getting older.
I do too, man.
It's working,
I mean,
it's working out for me.
I'm okay with it.
There's parts of it that I probably, you know, there's times where I'm like, oh, you know, adulting sucks. But, man, it's a much more comfortable
yeah.
in your own skin time of life, you
for
know?
Sure.
Yeah.
It's not as much like I need to X, Y, or Z. You just
yeah.
kind of are who you are at that point, finally, you know?
I think it's also like when you don't have kids, there's like a level of adulthood you never get to, like me. Like,
God bless you.
I have leveled up. Like, I'm way
yeah,
leveled up.
Yeah, I know.
That,
all my
friends
Richard's leveled up.
Yeah, if you take
like a real
each,
guy.
Each little chunk of all the equipment that you have is like a child. So you just take this stuff and that becomes a baby, and then you take all that
right.
out.
No,
that
no, no. Oh, yeah.
So I used to have a really cool instrument collection. Now I'm down to like an electric guitar, an acoustic, a uke that I bought for my son.
But it's yours.
And I was like, hey, buddy, you want to learn how to play? I bought you a really nice uke for you to learn on, you know? Like, we'll keep it in my room. It's okay. You just let me know when you want to play. So,
you got to
wear
white
really.
Gloves.
Yeah, exactly.
Do any of your kids take lessons from Anna?
My kids are, no.
Your kids are too little.
My kid, my son's five, my daughter's three.
Okay.
And
yeah,
they run around and go crazy all
yeah,
the time.
Mine,
they're amazing.
I've thought about, Graham's asked me to take lessons
you
from
should,
you.
But you know how to play the piano.
I know, but I can't give my own son lessons.
No.
My patience level is like down there.
Okay.
I'd be like, curl your fingers. God, you're grounded. Just listen. You can't hear what I'm doing. I learn by ear. Why can't
yeah,
you learn
only,
by ear?
Only one out of awesome. My only one out of my three kids, I can sit down and play music. Like the other two are technically old enough where really I should be teaching them, and
yeah.
I'm just like I can't. I'm like no, that one's C. No, that one's C. No, that one. That's
go ask
the
your
C.
father. Yeah. Like,
I
yeah.
have patience all day long with other people's children.
Yeah, but with yours, you're like yeah.
It's
that's
hard.
How it goes.
Daniel, he's like you know. He's. I didn't have to tell him 25 times where C is, so.
That's good.
I love you, children.
When do you guys think you'll start making a new recording? What goes on? Did you guys apply for South by Southwest or anything?
Not
or
this
you,
year. We
not,
did.
Last
we
year we were
year.
In South by. Yeah,
okay.
But this year.
And the year before, weren't we?
And the year before, yeah. So we
for
didn't this year
before,
kind of
or...
because of me mostly, I think, because I was just like, I had a pregnant wife and I was like transitioning jobs at the Alamo and I just had a ton going on. I was like, dude, I can't like commit to something, you know,
right.
this far out, like not knowing how things
yeah.
are going to go and all that. So we skipped it this year.
It's actually better.
Steve Sanders was just on the show.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Sorry.
That's okay.
Like, let's talk Alamo.
Soon. Yeah. but yeah, so
this
you know,
year
we're not
no.
doing this year, but we're writing and we're, I think, you know, like you said, we've already got like six or seven songs that
yeah.
are really coming along
mm-hmm.
nicely. And I think we'll probably,
I think our goal is to write 15 ish and
yeah,
then narrow down to 12, you
middle,
know,
probably, you know, like middle
or of next year,
middle of the, yeah, 2018.
I think there is a sense of urgency to get it going again,
yeah.
at least to get the recording going. You know, we're obviously not going to. Like Russian songwriting, but
right. It's like one of those things that if you leave it too long, it'll get hard to go back to. Like
right.
when you don't exercise for like a week,
yeah,
and then
right.
you try and go back. It's like, oh, I don't know.
Yeah,
right.
No, for sure.
But
yeah,
we've been writing like this fall. I think that you know we're working. We've been working on new songs every
good.
Week. I mean, we didn't. I guess this week, but like 4 days after your baby was born,
we practiced.
Yep.
Yeah, we like
again the benefit of being right down the street, like two doors down.
I know, but still.
I mean, I thought I was like, really? Are you sure? I mean,
I understand you got families and you've got other ways that you make money and stuff, but there needs to be like a level of commitment to the thing.
For sure.
Oh yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, then my family recognize. I mean, my wife is very.
Is he one of those guys that gets cranky when he doesn't do it for? Yeah.
She recognizes exactly that it's like cheaper than therapy for me. You know what I mean? Like I need like my little. You know,
yeah. It's so true.
I need my little time.
When I was married, there was a time transitioning after that Mr. Raga Baby band where I just was like, I'm gonna not play gigs for like 3 months and kind of redefine myself. I remember the middle of the second month, she was just like, dude,
please go.
Like, go jam with your friends. Like, they're playing at this thing. I know they'll let you get up there. Like, go
just do
the thing.
Right? Yeah.
I would go kind of crazy if I was.
Yeah.
And I noticed it.
I play
daily.
Well, but
But doing the band is different, and like that's why it's great. Even when you feel like you don't want to practice, or it's like you're tired, you're like, but then we just go and do it. As soon as you get into it, it's
soul enriching.
Yes.
And you need that.
Yep.
And that's what happens when a lot of people have this talent, but they don't nurture it in any way. They just go into their jobs and their families, and they do their thing. They become unhappy.
Yeah. Right.
Because the thing that feeds their soul, their family feeds their soul, but there is another thing that you need to get from something else.
Right.
And, it's
there's
great
the
that you guys have that.
You can't do the like all, in my opinion, you can't do the all of one thing. Like everything is, even family, you know, like your family benefits from you being a person outside of the family.
Yeah.
You can bring new ideas and thoughts back.
Totally.
You have a fresh perspective. You have a rejuvenated spirit, you know, which all benefit.
And just being in the band family. With no nothing else, you guys would drive each other crazy.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's right.
I really like what you guys do. And I think it's important that you do it. Cause I think that there's, at least in this scene here, there is like there's a lot of Americana. There's a lot of folk. There's a lot of that kind of stuff. But I feel you guys are unique and really like with the harmonies and the focus on that. You got great songs and stuff and creative people.
Thank you. That's awesome.
Yeah.
We are glad to do it.
Yeah. You come on, you come on podcasts with racists.
Yeah. Exactly. It's wonderful. We meet all kinds of hateful people. It's wonderful. No, it's been fun.
Yeah, thank you guys for doing the show. People can find you. The album is called A Forest in Trees.
Yep.
Correct.
And you can find them at thewheelwrights.com.
Mm-hmm.
Anna, Seth, and John, thank you for coming to the show.
John Michael.
Michael, hyphenated.
John Michael, sorry.
Thanks. It's cool. Okay.
It's cool. You can call him Jimbo, too.
Jimbo. Yeah. John Michael. Thank you guys for coming on the show.
Yeah, thank
all right,
you.
Good luck.
All
right. Good luck. Good luck. All right, The Wheelwright. See them January 20th at the Lemon Lounge right here in Austin, Texas. Get their debut album, A Forest in Trees, which is an album/visual/art project. 13 songs with 13 unique pieces of art involved with it. Go to thewheelwrights.com to find out all you need to know about Seth, Anna, and John Michael. Great people. It was great talking to them. Don't forget, while you're out there checking out thewheelwrights.com, you can subscribe to this podcast on the Apple Podcast app, on the iPhone Podcast app, on the Android Podcast app, on Stitcher, on TuneIn, on Overcast, and basically anywhere where you find podcasts. Find it, subscribe. You will get a new show every Tuesday and every Friday. All right? Thank you so much for listening to the show. Happy New Year to all of you. I hope you all have a great, great week. And here's some more music from The Wheelwrights, their album, A Forest in Trees. Happy New Year, you guys. Let's get down.
Traitors, I wonder aloud to the Lord, is it? attention, postmaster. This letter is time sensitive. Yeah, I must connect to the place I was before. And there's only one way out. There's only one way out.
Is it in?